Anyways, the main reason we're trying to check out someone's static posture is to potentially identify three what are called common distortion patterns on page 134. And the three common distortion patterns are going to be the next three pages, next three pages right here, which is going to be made up of pronation distortion syndrome, which is the bullet point at the bottom of page 134, pronation distortion syndrome, lower crossed syndrome, and upper crossed syndrome. You guys need to have these memorized, more or less. What they are, what muscles are tight, what muscles are weak, what they mean as far as potentially bad things for exercise, and how to fix them. NASM really likes to bring these three, bad movement patterns or postural distortion patterns to light on the test, and it's really good because if you get into the field, if you diagnose someone or like say, hey, you potentially have pronation distortion syndrome, people get, whoa, like what is pronation distortion syndrome? It's a thing. Oh, what I have is a thing? It makes you sound kind of very smart and builds a lot of value. It's like, oh, well, I mean, if you go work out on your own, I'm telling you right now, within a month to 2 months, you're going to have knee pain, you're going to have low back pain, and you're not going to be happy about your results. I mean, that's a total selling tool right there. If someone comes in to me and I notice that they have pronation distortion syndrome, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to get injured because you don't know how to address what you have. You don't know that your knees are caving in. You don't know that your ankles are pronating. You don't know that your hips are tight, and that's all going to lead to an injury, guaranteed, if you continue to run or work out with those sort of things. Anybody ever have shoulder pain in here from benching? Come on. We're all guys.
You don't bench.
What's that?
I do that to your ladies.
Yeah, dip form or any tricep work or bench press. I was the same way when I first started working out. I was like, oh, I'm just going to hit bench press today because I hit that every day, right? Chest day every day. and before you knew it, my pec major, because I didn't really stretch too much, my pec major were starting to pull and get a little bit tight, and all of a sudden my posture was a little bit rounded up top. Upper crossed syndrome. Okay. And then if I'm walking around like this all the time, little rounded shoulders, and then I'm, you know, swimming or surfing, okay, that's gonna hurt my posture. All of a sudden my elbows and shoulders started to hurt when I surfed. And then anytime I went to bench press, I couldn't bench press more than like 125 pounds because anytime I did, it would hurt like really, really bad in my whole left side, my whole left shoulder, and then into my elbow. That's a guarantee with someone with upper cross syndrome. Okay? Can they do a shoulder press overhead?
No.
No, what's going to happen? Like I said, everybody, okay, we're going to do the assessment again. Everybody round their shoulders as much as you possibly can, as far as you possibly can. Okay? Try to lift your arm up as far as you can in front of you, but reach and lift. Okay? Pretty difficult, right? Feeling a little pinch maybe in the front of that anterior compartment of the shoulder.
I choked myself. Yeah.
Miguel's delts are so big he choked himself by rounding his shoulders.
Just try to squeeze your neck.
Okay, so that's bad posture. That's upper cross syndrome. That's rounded shoulders. Now everybody roll their shoulders back and retract them as much as you can. Now anterior, lift your arm in front of you as high as you can. Were you able to go all the way overhead?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, a lot easier. Lot less. Hindrance, and that's strictly because of the kinetic chain of the upper body.
Massages?
I don't know. I hope so. you can imagine someone with rounded shoulders comes to you and says, "I want to get big shoulders."
Oh, here you go. We have four.
Okay, cool. Thank you. If somebody comes to you and says, "Oh, you know, I want to get in shape. I want to get a little bit broader physique. I want to look better." Because my girlfriend's come back into town, and you know I want to look sexy naked for her, or boyfriend either way, and you see them and you analyze their posture and they have rounded shoulders and they're saying they want to get bigger. Is that even possible? It's gonna be extremely extremely difficult to come up with the correct exercises that aren't gonna get them or that aren't gonna injure them. But if they try to do it on their own, guess what their number one shoulder exercise is? Probably military press or shoulder press or Smith machine press because they don't know what they're doing. Or the shoulder press machine, right? And guess what they're going to end up doing? Anytime they go overhead to press, guess where they're what's going to happen in their back? They're going to need to open up because they can't get their shoulders up here because their pec major is so damn tight. Okay? Or their lats might be too tight. So when you think about the postural distortion patterns common distortion patterns that are not good for posture or the kinetic chain alignment, you literally need to address those. Otherwise, you can guarantee an injury if they continue to work out with that same posture. It's that easy. Okay? And you can tell the person that doesn't want to work with you or doesn't want to pay you that, hey, just as a heads up, if you go at this alone, I'm guaranteeing within a month or two you're going to come back to me and say, I injured my knee, or I injured my shoulder, or I have this pain in my elbow, for whatever syndrome that you're looking at, okay? Or you're going to tear your ACL trying to play basketball that you want to play, or MCL, or... There's common injuries associated with all these postural distortion patterns, and if you notice somebody that has one, you can literally go up to them and say, hey, like I see that you're trying to get some good work done here. If we did an assessment, I can kind of show you some things that might help you prevent injury, because at the pace that you're going right now, you might be a little bit likely to have injuries because of your rounded shoulders. Nobody necessarily wants to hear that. But you put that little word in, and then a month later they're like, oh crap, you know, and the trainer was right. My shoulder's hurting, my elbow's hurting, and I can't do this exercise anymore. It's like, oh, well, maybe I should go talk to that guy that told me that little thing way back.
Sounds like a cold call sale.
Yeah, kind of is. I mean, walking up to people in the gym is kind of like a cold call in a way. Yeah. You just hey, I'm Eddie. What's going on? Hey, just saw you. What's going? Or saw your exercise here. Great work. Kicking some ass, like I see you all the time doing a lot of work. I just want to see if you wanted to do a little assessment for the shoulder joint, just because I can see there might be a little bit of rounding that could cause a little bit of shoulder pain. Do you notice any shoulder pain? Something like that. Oh yeah, actually I do a little bit. You know, when I bench, I have this little pinch in my left shoulder.
Pinch and
tinge. Oh well, I knew that because your shoulders are rounded. That's easy. Then they say, yeah, let's check my shoulder posture. Okay, fine. And then you do a quick assessment, build some value. Regardless of if they train with you or not, you provided some value to their life that in potentially in the future, when they get a better job or when they decide that they might want training, that they're going to come to you because they remember you from helping them out before. And that's all fitness sales is just going up and talking to people, building a little bit of value, showing your worth, and then eventually the clients will come. It's a consistent... consistency of going out there and talking to people and analyzing and building that value. That is what makes the full schedule occur. Like I said, everything in here is going to be related to sales because that's the number one most important thing in personal training, is because you have to sell in order to get clients and in order to help people. Because if you don't have any clients and you're the best trainer in the world, are you the best trainer in the world?
No.
No, because you don't have anyone to prove that with. Okay. So, pronation distortion syndrome, lower cross syndrome, upper cross syndrome, page 135, table 6.9. Okay, pronation distortion syndrome. Pronation distortion syndrome is in figure 6.2 on the bottom left, page 134. That directly relates to the chart. So, pronation distortion syndrome, is it an upper body or lower body issue?
Lower body.
Lower body. What is happening in the picture that you see in figure 6.20? It's the fat people thing, okay? So the extremely obese people might be more prone to this because of the sitting down a lot and being heavy might just force them into this position, maybe, okay? Or just people that aren't fat might have it too, which I've flat seen feet. A lot of too. So this is where people might say, oh, I have flat feet. Okay, you might have flat feet, but let's actually check to see if it's a postural or functional issue before you diagnose yourself with flat feet. Because pronated feet could be considered flat feet because your arch decreases when your feet roll inwards, as you can see at this lady's feet. I assume it's a lady. At the bottom of bottom page 134, her ankles are rolling inwards, causing the arch to decrease. Okay, imagine a female that has this issue putting on high heels.
Would it bother you if you knew it was a dude? Would it change the way that you
change the way that I teach right now? That's a check. I mean, You might
has no hair on his legs.
Because that guy.
There might be a little something extra in between the legs there if this was the a male.
Oh,
no, I'm joking.
So how would you tell if it's structural or just muscle?
Well, we'll talk about structural versus functional in a second here. But structural is bone related. Functional is muscle related. That's the difference. So a structural flat footed person, literally the way that their arch is shaped, the metatarsals are flat. Or they don't go up into an arch as much as and that's a bone issue.
How will you be able to identify that?
Yeah. By looking at a squat. If somebody squats and their feet roll inward, you can guarantee that their flat feet is a functional issue. If somebody squats and their feet don't roll in or out or anything, they stay directly neutral and they still have flat feet when they stand upright, then it's going to be a structural issue.
So they'll still be able to do the squat if it's structural?
Either way, they're going to be able to do the squat. But if they do a squat and you see their feet rolling inward
more,
that's when you know it's going to be that functional sort of issue. All right, so pronation distortion syndrome. Looking at page 135, the short muscles. What's tight? Okay, you need to have these memorized for the field, and also Nassim will ask you one question on each of these, most likely. So short muscles are the gastroc. What's the gastroc?
Calf.
Soleus.
Calf.
Yeah, the lower portion of the calf. Peroneals. Anybody heard of the peroneals before?
Perennials.
Peroneals are the lateral side of your lower leg, that evert your foot. Okay, Is eversion the same as pronation?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's rolling in. So when knees are tight, it would literally pull the ankle laterally or pronated in a pronated position. Then you have adductors. If you notice, the knees are kind of doing something in figure 6.202. What is it doing? They're caving in or inwardly rotating. Good. So the adductors are pretty tight too, or short muscles. And then we have the IT band head or iliotibial head, hip flexor complex, and then biceps femoris that is short. What should you do with all the short muscles in table
6.9?
Foam roll and stretch them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does anybody know how to foam roll their bicep femoris? How do you foam roll your bicep femoris?
You roll on it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where is it? Where is it located? What is the bicep femoris? Where is it?
Hamstring.
It is a hamstring. Good. Which hamstring? Medial or lateral?
It's not gonna be lateral because that. Oh, no, lateral.
It is the lateral. Okay. Bicep femoris is the lateral hamstring. So you literally foam roll your hamstrings, but focus on the lateral side just next to the IT band. But
it doesn't run directly down?
Nope. Semitendinosus are the ones that kind of run on the inside, but right in the middle back of the leg. Okay. Bicep femoris is the lateral hamstring. Good. Okay, so foam rolling and stretching that is going to be important. Gastroc and soleus, everybody knows how to foam roll and stretch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the difference in stretching your gastroc compared to your soleus?
One's the lateral, one's medial.
Nope. They're both right over each other. But the gastroc does have two heads, one lateral, one medial.
I'm sure the soleus.
So what's up with the soleus and gastroc? How do you stretch them? What's the difference in stretching the soleus versus the gastroc?
Bend the knee straight.
Yeah.
Good. When the knee is straight, which ones get stretched?
Gastroc. Could be your gastroc.
Gastrocnemius. Good. When your ankle or when your knee is bent, which one gets stretched?
Soleus.
Good. Your soleus gets stretched. So that's how you stretch your calf or your soleus versus your gastroc. Should you do both calf stretches?
Yes.
Absolutely. Because typically, actually, the soleus is almost more commonly tight than the gastroc.
Yeah.
So a bent knee calf stretch and a straight leg calf stretch are both going to target two different muscles of the calf. Important. Okay. Then you have your lengthened muscles, anterior tib, posterior tib, vastus medialis, gluteus medius, hip external rotators. What do you need to do to the lengthened muscles? Yeah, you don't want to tighten them per se, because we want to use the term strengthen them, okay? By working them out or focusing on them in our exercise program, isolating them. What alter joint mechanics? Increase knee adduction, internal rotation, and foot pronation, and also foot external rotation, and then ankle dorsiflexion and ankle inversion. Decreased ankle dorsiflexion and inversion. So what are the injuries that come from something like this? Plantar fasciitis, shin splints, patellar tendonitis, and low back pain. This one mainly is low back pain and medial and lateral knee pain is what I see this as. So if somebody was to squat with this sort of thing and or run or do anything with this sort of pronation distortion syndrome, I can guarantee they'll have low back pain and knee pain within a month to 2 months' time if they exercise frequently.
What about hip pain?
Hip pain would be... The hip's unique because the hip, if you're internally rotated at the hip doesn't necessarily create more abnormal stress from that. But the other areas of the kinetic chain get affected, knees, ankles, low back regions. So that is pronation distortion syndrome. Next one is lower cross syndrome. At the bottom of page 135, you have lower cross syndrome. What is lower cross syndrome characterized by?
Arch to back.
Low back arch or anterior pelvic tilt. Excessive low back arching. That's all the lower cross syndrome is. Okay, so if you memorize one thing about lower cross syndrome, know that it's the anterior pelvic tilt. Okay, who's more likely to have an anterior pelvic tilt, males or females?
Women,
yes, and that's why.
Boobs, hips.
Okay, maybe if they have extremely large breasts, they might be front weighted, and what do they have to do to their butt?
Counter.
They have to counteract and stick it out more, which causes that lumbar lordosis, sort of arch in the low back. What happens when you wear high heels? Is your weight shifted more forward
really
or more backward?
Me what happens when I wear high heels?
Miguel, what happens when you wear high heels?
I don't want to disclose that.
Okay, so when you're on your toes, which way is your weight shifted?
Forward.
Forward. So what do you have to do?
Compensate by.
Does the position look familiar?
Okay.
When females wear high heels because it makes their calves look nice, but then when you're anteriorly shifted, what do you have to do? You have to stick your butt out and backwards. And then what happens at the chest when your butt is out and backwards?
It goes up.
Chest has to stick out too. So you end up getting like this duck waddle when you wear high heels. Some people do it very gracefully, but still, you're anteriorly shifted, causing potentially an anterior tilt in the pelvis. Okay. So lower cross syndrome, what muscles are tight? Well, you have your gastrocnemius and soleus. Hey, what do you know? The gastroc and soleus are tight again. Are those probably tight with almost any movement compensation in the lower body?
Maybe, yeah.
Pretty much, almost, yeah.
Yeah.
Calves are probably the most commonly tight muscle out of any muscle that I've ever seen in as far as fitness goes. That's why I always have people foam roll stretch their calves, even if they have great calf flexibility. I just want to make sure that they stay good, okay? So what's tight, short muscle-wise, gastroc soleus, hip flexor complex. You can imagine the front of the hip, the muscles that attach from the top of the femur to above the, or that cross the hip joint. If these were to shorten, what would happen? You get kind of pulled down, forcing the hips to be anteriorly rotated. Make sense?
So stretch out the hip flexors.
So stretching out the hip flexors, yeah, is a very good idea. Adductors, which ones are those? Adductors. What do they do? Inner thighs, good. Okay. Latissimus dorsi. Why would the lats potentially be tight here?
It's rounding the shoulders.
Back.
Oh no, that's for this one.
If the lats are tight, where how would it move them?
Oh, like they'll pull them down.
Yeah, literally. Like so, the lats attach to the top of your hip.
Yeah.
As you can see, if the lats attach to the top of your hip, not only do they pull the arm from the humerus down, but they can pull the hip, which way?
Up.
The back of the hip up. From here, watch me, up.
Reverse.
Sorry. They could, which if you pull the back of the hip up, what happens? You get an anterior tilt of the pelvis.
So if a muscle's short, it can pull either direction.
Correct.
Not just from origin to insertion, but insertion to origin.
Definitely, yeah. So if the muscle's tight, it'll affect both insertion or both the insertion and the origin, meaning both of them can move. All right. So what's lengthened? Or then you also have the erector spinae, which is also a spinal extensor. Okay.
Erector
spinae. Lengthened muscles or weak muscles are going to be anterior tip, posterior tip, gluteus maximus, gluteus medius, transverse abdominis, and internal oblique. Based off of the theory of altered reciprocal inhibition, are they're going to be an antagonist and agonist relationship between the short muscles and the lengthened muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? What's the opposite of the hip flexors?
Extensors.
The hip extensors. What will give me the biggest hip extensor?
Glutes.
Glute max. Yeah, okay. If the adductors are tight, what muscle is going to be weak?
Abductor.
The abductors. The gluteus medius and abductor? Yeah.
Yeah.
If the latissimus dorsi is going to be tight, what might be weak? That's a not quite an antagonistic relationship, but you can imagine the lats are on the back. Transverse abdominis is all around. Okay. And then you have the... what's the opposite of the gastroc?
Anterior tibialis.
Anterior tibialis, literally. So... whenever we think of a postural imbalance, if one muscle is tight, can you pretty much guarantee that the antagonist is going to be weak?
Yeah.
Okay? Because that's the theory of altered reciprocal inhibition. Okay. So, that is going to be the lower cross syndrome. Possible injuries would be low back pain, for sure. That's the most common one. Hamstring strains. And then anterior knee pain, or like patellar tendonitis, patellar knee pain, too. If somebody runs with anterior tilted pelvis, their low back is just going to get shot because the discs are taking a lot of the force transmission. Yeah. Okay. Figure 6.22 shows upper crossed syndrome. What do we notice about upper crossed syndrome? What's up with that guy?
Has rounded shoulders and head tilted forward.
Rounded shoulders and forward head. Yeah, kind of like as you get older, maybe this might happen. If you work at a desk job all day, where are your shoulders located?
In front of you.
If you're squinting at a computer all day, where's your head going? Forward, right? Okay. So your typical desk job worker, or the guy that's on his computer all day long, might have that anterior or upper cross syndrome. Okay. Also, guys that bench too much and don't row enough or don't work out the opposite muscles enough are going to get tight pecs and kind of pull them forward, right? Okay, that was me. I admit it. I was in the gym doing chest 5 times a week, you know, just I want to get big. I'm going to work out chest only.
All
boom. Time. That's all you got to do. That's all.
And the Omega.
Yes. All right. So what's tight and what's weak with the upper cross syndrome? Okay. You have upper traps, levator scapulae, sternocleidomastoid, scalenes, lats, pec major, pec minor, teres major, subscapularis. Okay. Anything that rotates you internally or elevates the scapula is going to be tight. Okay? What then is weak? You have your deep cervical flexors. Okay? That one is actually typically the test question. It'll say, which of the following muscles is considered weak in upper cross syndrome? And it's the deep cervical flexors. Then you have your serratus anterior, which is a depressor. Then you have rhomboids, mid-trap, lower-trap, teres minor, infraspinatus, external rotators of the rotator cuff. Okay. All right, what are injuries that could occur from upper cross syndrome? Headaches, for sure. Okay. You can imagine for every inch that your head posture shifts forward, you add 10 pounds extra stress to the posterior muscles holding them in place. If you anybody ever text for a while or look on their computer for a while and their neck starts to feel a little sore or tired or weak,
mm-hmm.
get a little crick in your neck sort of thing, that's exactly what's going on. For every inch, there's 10 extra pounds of force. And from here to there, that's probably about 6 inches or so. So imagine somebody goes really far forward, is that 60 pounds of extra weight being forced on the posterior neck muscles?
Yeah.
Pretty gnarly, right? Possible headaches from fatigue of the neck.
Would that be the upper traps?
What about the upper traps?
That's the way you're talking about the neck muscles.
Levator scapulae, upper traps, scalenes are up there. Yeah, those muscles are going to be used a lot, we'll say. Does that make sense?
Maybe you should just angle all offices at an incline.
Just
redesign desks like you know. Set back like this, that way
there's a $1 million idea. The desk, the zero G desk.
We're still gonna be looking
people
at our
fall
phones,
asleep though.
Though,
yeah.
It's
like,
true.
Our phones.
You get to
always look at our phones.
What if you made a hat that held the phone in front of your eyes, and then you just like do like this, and it just hangs there.
Attachment for the carrots. It's like
yeah. Yeah, it's like a carrot on a string dangling in front of your face. That's that. There's the $1 million idea. I knew it. So you come with so many good ideas in this class. Okay. So on page 137, you have the static postural assessment. With the static postural assessment, you're really just looking for one of these three. Where you're actually assessing for any of these three, really. And it'll give you a good little breakdown on what to check, the foot and the ankle, then the knee, then the hips, then the shoulders, then the head and cervical spine, from the anterior, lateral, and posterior view. Cool. You can read through that, and all you're really looking for is just those three, or two of those three, or three of those three, postural distortion patterns. That's all you're looking for. Typical one that you'll see in a static postural assessment is going to be upper cross syndrome. If it's upper cross syndrome, you will easily be able to notice the forward head and rounded shoulders from the lateral view, right? Is that pretty noticeable?
Yeah.
Okay. If somebody's like this, it's, you know, they look pretty good, right? The ear needs to be in line with the middle of the shoulder. Okay? Which we will do. All right. So now dynamic posture, this is going to be your bread and butter. The overhead squat assessment, page 139. This is your bread and butter as a fitness professional.
This guy's ear is forward of that line.
Yeah, it is.
Seen that.
Yeah. No, this guy actually has a slightly anteriorly shifted head.
And he's not standing in the anatomical.
Like if you see on page 136, he's trying to push his head forward. And on page 138 in the 6.24, he thinks he's neutral, but he's not neutral. He's even got a little bit too forward of a head. He needs to be about, not quite an inch, maybe a half an inch further back. But you can tell the angle of his neck is slightly forward, right?
Yeah.
That's actually just by, the NASM didn't choose a perfectly neutral person. It's pretty funny. There's a female, I think, yeah, there's a female in here on the next page that does have a pretty neutral positioning. You can't quite see it because her arms are in the air, but yeah. All right. Okay. So, overhead squat. What is the overhead squat?
Squat with your hands over your head.
Yeah, literally it's a squat with your hands over your head. Why do your hands need to be over your head?
See if your lats.
Good flexibility.
Flexibility of what joint is tested when the arms go overhead?
Shoulder.
And scapula. And scapula, yeah. Scapulothoracic joint. If you put your arms in front of you, like this, for a squat position, what does that do?
Balance.
So why can you not assess someone with their arms in front of them as opposed to overhead?
Because
it changes your center of gravity.
Changes your center of gravity. Which way does it shift it?
Forward.
And what do you have to do to counteract that forward counterbalance? Sorry.
Like lean back.
You have to lean back a little bit, decreasing ankle flexibility, causing you to not see as much at the ankle that you want to see. Making the squat way easier. That's why most people squat with their hands directly in front of them, because it's a lot easier. Okay. Except Jesus, he's got good dorsiflexion, so we're all jealous of Jesus. Jesus probably had a pretty good overhead squat, you think, right? Actually, it's pretty dang funny, because people that I really, really respect, like, you know, in life, there's like, oh, that guy's an epic athlete, or, you know, like, oh my god, like, he's the best surfer, best golfer, best, you know, soccer player or something. Like, I have so much respect for them, and then I see them squat. Or I do like an overhead squat, even if someone's closer to me and I see an overhead squat of them, and they suck, all respect just goes out the window. It's crazy. I'm like, oh my god, what's wrong with you? You're like my idol, but you can't be my idol now because you don't have a good squat. It's
flexibility.
Yeah. Do you ever stretch?
Wow.
Okay. No, but it's pretty funny because I literally judge people on their overhead squat. You think you're in shape? Let me see your overhead squat. Because my reason for being, yeah, you may look good. You may look like all sexy naked. But if you can't squat, do an overhead squat perfectly,
done.
Just out the window for me. Nope, sorry, don't like you anymore.
It's not valid.
No, but it's pretty funny to see like the best athletes in the world that just have shitty squats. But you can guarantee like all the NBA guys that are getting injured all the time, Derrick Rose, Rajon Rondo, Russell Westbrook, all those guys, they don't have good squats. I know. I respect the crap out of them, but I guarantee you put them in front of me with an overhead squat, they have limited dorsiflexion. Their knees probably cave in, ACL, MCL, prone injury stuff. They probably even have some other stuff going on too. It'd just be like just devastating, you know, to see an idol squat in front of you and have a poor overhead squat. Unless they're CrossFitters, because then they have good mobility because they work on their mobility all the time, you know. And flexibility is pretty important for CrossFit because you got to put yourself in crazy weird overhead positions, right? That's why you can't really progress a CrossFitter until they have good ankle mobility. But that's also why they turn their feet out when they squat. It's because most of them don't have perfect ankle mobility, but it's close. Okay, anyways, good sidetrack. So, overhead squat assessment. The purpose is designed to assess dynamic flexibility, core strength, balance, and overall neuromuscular control. That is a direct NASM test question. First part of that sentence. What is the purpose for doing an overhead squat? Well, it's to assess dynamic flexibility, core strength, balance, and overall neuromuscular control. All right. So what do you do in the overhead squat? If you look at page 140, they're going to show you the setup position, starting position. Feet straight ahead. Feet should be hip to shoulder width apart. If you want to be strict on them, I go hip width apart. Okay. Hip width apart is about 6 to 8 inches in between their feet. Okay. If you want to be a little nicer, you can go to shoulder width apart, which is about 8 to 12 inches in between their feet, just about like so. Typically, I go hip width because I want them to know that they suck in life, and that's why they're coming to me to train really well. Mm-hmm. I'm joking. So the procedure, position, client stands with feet shoulder or hip width apart, point is straight ahead. The foot and ankle complex should be in a neutral position. Neutral position for the ankle complex is facing straight ahead, pointed directly straight. Shoes off is important because you want to see what's going on at the ankle. And then have their arms overhead, straight, extended, or with the elbows straight, more or less. And the upper arm should bisect the torso from a lateral view, meaning directly in the middle. Basically, what I say is that keep your biceps by your ears, or keep your arms, upper arm by your ears. Because when people put their arms overhead, they typically just do this, right? Where are my arms?
A little slightly forward.
Yeah, little forward, okay. Which you want them to have them all the way back by the ears. All right, so the movement is, you must instruct the client to squat roughly to the height of a chair, and then return to the starting position, okay? NASM says squat to the height of a chair.
Yeah, I was going to hear that because that was one of my questions.
Correct, yeah. NASM says squat to the height of a chair, and that is okay for a relatively out-of-shape client, we'll say. What should we be really doing? What's a perfect overhead squat? Is a perfect overhead squat from here to here and back?
Full range of motion, right?
Ass to grass.
Exactly. Do you squat only to chair height? In
at least to that 90
functional
degree.
Movements?
Only for power.
90 degree,
yeah, you should get to 90 degrees. Should you get full range of motion typically?
You should.
Yeah. Are you going to be more functional in CrossFit if you get your ass to the floor?
Ass to grass.
Yeah, absolutely. What I want someone in a perfect overhead squat is them to be able to go all the way to their butt hits their heels and still be in good position. What NASM says is squat to roughly the height of a chair, which is shown on page 141 in figure 6.29. That's their knees are exactly at 90 degrees, and that's they say you only need to go that low to assess the overhead squat position. I'll start someone in that depth to determine if there's any movement imbalances at that height. If I see a ton at that height, do I need to see them go any further?
Probably not.
No. Can they even go any further?
So unless it looks
no, they cannot.
Good.
What's up?
To the 90. So unless you
if it looks good at 90, they need to go full range of motion. Because to tell the truth, and a lot of people have a great squat to 90, mm-hmm. But it's when you go even lower is when you test the real flexibility.
These two parallel lines will change though. The lower she gets, will that start acting up?
If you have bad calf flexibility, those two lines become a little shifted that way. Or the upper body line would bend or lean down into the lower body line. And then you'd have a bisection, which we're going to go over when we do the overhead squat. Okay. So. Yeah, so just to complete this, it says, yeah, squat 5 repetitions from each position, which is anterior and lateral. I want you to do anterior, lateral, and posterior, because that is going to be, you'll be able to see a few extra things from the posterior view as well. And, yeah, so if the feet straight, ankles and knees from the front, the feet should remain straight with the knees tracking in line with the second and third toes. That's a test question. Correct alignment of the kinetic chain is the knee over the second and third toe. Or it might even just say the second toe. Make sure from the lateral view that the lumbopelvic hip complex and shoulder and cervical complex are going to be neutral position. And yeah, the tibia should remain in the line with the torso while the arms stay in line with the torso as well. That's going to be a good overhead squat, which they're showing that in figure 6.29. That's the perfect positioning for the overhead squat in a female. This is the female. Okay? Meaning the two lines are parallel of the tibia as well as the upper torso. Okay? So then you have the compensations. What are you looking for in the anterior view? Do the feet flatten and or turn out? This is on page 141. Do the feet flatten and turn out, which is if you turn the page, that's what feet flatten and turn out look. Top of page 142. Okay? Do the knees move inward and adduct, which is at the bottom of page 142? That's what you're looking for. Or does the low back arch is right there too. From the lateral view, you have does the low back arch, does the torso lean forward excessively, which is going to be figured 6.34 on page 143. Or do the arms fall forward from the lateral view, which is going to be figure 6.35. If those happen, you need to mark it down on your assessment sheet. What happens if those muscle imbalances happen and you mark it down? Do you have an idea of what you need to do to fix them? You do, because if you look at page 144, table 6.12, for every movement compensation, it has the full protocol for fixing that, which you can also download the Overhead Squat Solutions Table, CES, on NASM.org's website, like I said. So if you Google Overhead Squat Solutions Table, CES, you can have a nice full assessment sheet that you can then print out and circle for your clients. It's a great tool. Okay, so then, looking at page 143, you have all of the movement imbalances. These are very, very exaggerated. Well, not very exaggerated, but I mean, you will see some people like this, but like the figure 6.30, does that look even possible? That looks very, very tough. Then you have figure 6.31. People's feet won't externally rotate that much. Typically, it's just like an inch or two out. Then you have the knees caving inward. Yeah, the knees caving inward, that's actually pretty accurate. What'll happen? The knees will touch very quickly. Jessica's first assessment was just boom, within 3 to 4 inches of depth, her knees were already touching, which we fixed, but it takes some formula and stretching to do that. Low back arches. This one actually isn't a very good representation of low back arch. You have a little bit of it there. But the low back arch is actually typically a little bit more noticeable than that. She's trying really hard, so I gave her that. But that's figure 6.33.
Does that make her like not go low?
The low back arching would she could still go low, but just there's a lot of the spine is not properly aligned, causing increased pressure on the discs.
And it'll hurt.
Which could cause low back pain, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And then figure 6.34, you have the excessive forward lean. Notice how the lines cross. Remember, those lines are supposed to be parallel. But if the ankle doesn't have enough mobility, the knee will not be able to move forward anymore, causing the upper torso to fall forward. Okay? That one's going to be really important. People think excessive forward lean, your hip flexors are the tightest thing. It's actually typically going to be the calf. The calf muscle is going to be the tightest. Okay? And then arms fall forward. See how her arms are not staying by her ears, or the arms are they create a acute or a obtuse angle right there. That is due to tightness in the lats and the pecs. Okay. So then you're going to check the boxes in which movement compensations they have, and immediately by looking at page 6.12, you're going to be able to tell what's tight and what's weak and what you need to work on, what you need to foam roll and stretch, what you need to strengthen in a corrective exercise program, which is mainly focuses on in phase one of the OPT model to address those issues. Can you progress someone to heavy weightlifting without good posture?
No.
Not recommended, not safe, gonna cause injury. Okay. yeah, not good. No bueno. So you can look at table 6.12 and determine what's tight and what's weak based off of each movement compensation. Remember, you will also, so noticing figure 6.30 on page 142, is that also a postural distortion syndrome or postural distortion pattern?
Which one?
Table 6.0 or figure 6.30 on page 142?
That's pronation distortion.
That's pronation distortion syndrome. Good. If the feet flatten, you can diagnose them with pronation distortion syndrome. Does it sound really cool and flashy to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
builds value.
Sound like a doctor diagnosing?
Kinda, yeah. But no, you can diagnose movement or muscle imbalances though. As a personal trainer, you can, I mean, diagnose might not be the right word, but you can
identify,
there you go,
like
muscle imbalances.
Illnesses.
Yeah, when people think of diagnosed, they think of drugs and disease.
You're not giving them diabetes.
Yeah. yeah. So if the feet turn out, is that any specific postural imbalance or postural distortion pattern? Not really. It is typically, if you look at figure 6.30, that's pronation distortion. That's what it looks like. If their feet don't flatten, it's not really pronation distortion syndrome. And notice how her knees are going out. That's just feet turn out and hips externally rotate more or less.
Cowboy Wild West syndrome.
Yeah. notice on in figure 6.32. Notice on figure 6.32, the knees are caving inward, but the feet are not rolling inward. See how the feet's in a neutral position, but the knees still cave in?
Mm-hmm.
That means that they only have the knees cave in pronation distortion syndrome, so you wouldn't want to diagnose them with pronation distortion. You could just say knees move inward, and you have one muscle imbalance there. Okay. Low back arches, is that a postural imbalance or postural distortion syndrome? Which one?
The lower crossed
syndrome. Good. If they have a low back arch, it's lower cross syndrome. Can you diagnose that person right there with lower cross syndrome?
Yes.
Does it sound flashy and cool?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, wow, you have lower cross syndrome. This is a serious issue. You need to work with me to train 3 times a week for 4 weeks in order to get rid of that and so you don't hurt yourself.
And then we can start training.
Okay. And then we could start focusing on your weight loss goal. No, you focus on them, both of them at the same time. But the other two are not really postural distortion patterns. Well, arms fall forward, that's an indication of what muscles are being tight.
Lats
and pecs. Which are both tight and upper cross syndrome. So most likely, if the arms fall forward when they stand up, they probably have a little bit of rounded shoulders, which you can tell from just having or them standing from the lateral view in a static postural assessment or walking on a treadmill or anything. Okay. Good. Okay. So the single leg squat assessment is next, and we're just going to go over this really quick. The single leg squat, you just hold, or somebody has their hands on their hips. They squat on a single leg, and you're looking to see if their knee caves inward. That's all you're looking at according to the NASM CPT. Okay, in the CES, you look at a bunch of different stuff with a single leg squat. But for right now, that's all you're going to want to focus on is does the knee cave inward during the overhead squat assessment, or during the single leg squat assessment.
So everything else could be off.
Yeah, with just an ASM CPT, all they really want you looking at is just the knee to cave in, if it doesn't.
Over foot on like a toe.
Yeah, well, basically, you could imagine with a single leg squat, if you have this going on, knee runs right over the toe, go nice and low, then come back up. Okay, but watch what happens. The knee can still stay over the toe, but the hip can externally rotate. Okay, you can have a hip dropping, like way low like that. You can have a hip hiking, like this. You can have a internal rotation of the torso, and the knee stays straight, and you have external rotation of the torso. So there's a lot of different stuff that can go on in the single leg squat, but according to the NASM CPT, and all you need to worry about is does the knee cave inward? If the knee caves inward, guess what? The exact same muscles that are tight when the knees cave inward in the overhead squat are what's tight and what's weak. Okay, and then it gives you a nice little breakdown on page 145 on how to do that assessment. Yeah, you just have their hands on their hips, 5 repetitions each side, and all you're looking for is does the knee move inward, adductor internally rotate. Okay, and then on table 6.13 on page 146, you have the chart, or the this checkpoints for the single leg squat assessment, the knee, and does the knee move inward? And then what's tight and what's weak based on those assessments. Good. Any questions on identifying or on the postural distortion patterns, overhead squat, or single leg squat? Okay, the most important thing that you do with this information is practice the shit out of it. Meaning, I want you to get your best friend, your partner, your girlfriend, your mom, and I want you to assess their posture and determine what they have. And then teach them how to foam roll and stretch, and then strengthen the muscles that are weak. Foam roll and stretch the tight muscles, strengthen the weak muscles. If you do that, you can create a perfect overhead squat, a perfectly functional mover, and literally reduce pain in their body. Is it a super quick fix, though? No, it's something that they need to do consistently for a month to 2 to 3 to 4 months, depending on how severe their muscle tightness and muscle weakness is. If someone's 45 years old and noticing for the first time that they have tight hamstrings, is it going to be really easy to undo those tight hamstrings? Mm-hmm. Typically, no.
Decades of just
shortening. Yeah.
Flexibility.
Yes. Okay. All right. Yeah. Make sure that you assess someone often. Any and all people, often, as often as you can. Okay. Any other questions on any of the postural distortion patterns or anything of that nature? Both of those assessments.